Welcome, everyone. You've tuned in to Paradigm Shifters. And our paradigm shifter today is one who actually cracked the ice on Paradigm Shifter in 2008. He was my first guest on this wonderful show where we meet amazing people making a difference on the planet. So welcome to the show, Randy Masters of Resonant Living and of Universal Song and of Sacred Geometrics, Consciousness and Beautiful Jewelry and Sound and Tuning Forks. Wow. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Veronica. You know, I a lot of times have to kind of play things down because people don't think if you do all those things, they don't take you seriously because you're in too many fields, you know. It's a strange thing. But you
know what I heard the other day is that that's the popular line to keep everybody down. But
people, it is exactly
people like Elon Musk and Richard Branson. Those guys do a million things, and they bring it together from very disparate sections. Yeah, well, you do too. So here we go.
Yeah, but you know, this is a life for me of bringing together things from other lifetimes where I went down deep down different rabbit holes, and now the rabbit holes are connecting up in this one. This one's about, you know, my classes at Globe are called Resonant Connections. It's about connecting the dots and seeing the a bigger view of the creation, let's say.
So what is resonance? Let's explain to everybody. I have one of my favorite little lines. It's very old, and you know it is, change the energy, change the reality. And I know you, and I've known you for a long time, and you're very astute about having everything in your home life resonate or have a specifically chosen resonance to it. And a lot of your healing work has to do with that and your musical. So tell everybody who you are and what you've been doing and how come it's going into energy like this more than a lot of us know how.
Well, you know, I've been a composer since I was in high school. I played professional music starting in high school. I taught music for 17 years in the university, teaching jazz and world music and songwriting. I got popular songwriting as a university class. You know, my degree, the university 4-year degree was in film and music blended together. And then later on, I got a master's and PhD in divinity, which is about studying the spiritual connectiveness. It's not about being polarized with any one particular belief or cults or any of that normal stuff you'd say, although I am an official reverend, I got all the papers, I married people, I can do all that stuff, you know, but it's really about, and in this lifetime, my spiritual directive is combining science and spirituality. So I do it through music a lot and looking at the whole universe from a musical mind point of view. And that's how I discover things, because I'm looking where others don't look. You know, they look in a different way. But when I consider that the whole reality was composed out of sound and light and organized from sound, even the principles of light are organized by the harmonics of sound. Same truth, as above, so below, and overtones and undertones. And I'm out to prove it. And I'm going to show the exact numbers of what I mean. I'm not going to make a bunch of philosophical remarks like you see in famous books without anything to back it up. I'm going to show exactly the numbers when I talk and do things.
Well, let me stop you for a sec. Is it true that I'm the only one with my particular sound note in the whole universe?
I would think so. I mean, why would the creator not have ultimate capacity for variations on the theme of the divine spark of creation, even including identical and nearly identical twins and all of that other type of thing? There is a unique signature. In fact, if you go to look at something that's manufactured, where every item that comes off the assembly line, let's say, because it's supposed to be stamped out cookie cutter like glassware, you know, forks.
Right. They're supposed to all be the same, uniform.
Yeah. But even though they look the same, and for almost everybody would say they're the same, each one still has its own unique signature within the lot. So if you got 100,000 of a certain kind of glass style of like a water bottle, you know, and I just got a water bottle not too long ago made by Vitbot, V-I-T-B-O-T, that's in an egg shape, which maintains the vortex, and it's glass. And I've been looking for those for a while. Instead of storing water in parallel glass walls, which undoes the life force flow on the water, this is in a proper geometric egg shape, speaking of glass. So, but even with those, everyone has got a slightly different signature. See, it's not clones. They look alike. Mm-hmm. They may behave mostly alike. But there are things that are different.
Wait a minute. This egg-shaped container, is that to keep the flow and the motion of vibration?
Maintain the vortex movement within something that would normally be static, like storing something. Mm-hmm. But it's not static. There is a vortex still happening. And, you know, when they got into King Tut's tomb and found these jars of essential oils, they were all perfect. How did that happen? Well, a couple things. One, they put them in the right containers. They built the room with special temperature control as well. The material that the containers were made of were special containers that interacted with the oils to preserve them. And the shape, based on the laws of shape resonance. Can you dig that?
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So that gets down to, you know, you've heard the expression being bent out of shape.
Yes.
Yeah, and we say...
So that means our vortex, it doesn't work.
Why do we say out of shape and bent out of shape? All of that's based on the reality.
Well, then if you have an organ in your body... You lose the coherence of who you are, right?
What's that?
You lose the coherence, the cohesiveness of who you are.
Yeah, if you exceed a certain boundary where there's permission of plus and minus that still maintains an integrity. And if it goes beyond that, it loses its ability to fractalize and to fit in with the fractal.
What is a fractal, Randy?
It's a duplicable mathematical blueprint that keeps duplicating at different scales from micro to macro.
Sort of like a holograph?
Yeah, in a certain kind of way. But that would be a little more technical to describe the difference between a hologram and a fractal. But the fractal, you know, has a certain shape, like the Mandelbrot set fractal and different ones, that here is this little cell, and everything in the cell has all the geometry that the bigger picture has. You see, it's the seed. It contains the alchemical formulas, numeric, geometric, light, sound codes to reproduce without deviating from the shape, even at different scales, from large to small. And our whole universe is like that. So when we are in the right shapes, we are like an antenna, can communicate with the unified field by that our shape resonates.
Okay.
In other words, it goes into a we're in sympathetic vibration with the universe. And if we get out of that shape, we don't. This is a sad thing, just for a moment, though, just out of respect. One of the things that happens with dwarfs when they're born is their body proportions are not in the same golden mean shapes. Like their heads are very big, their feet are small in their body. Not that they're just short. You mm-hmm. see, it's not about how tall they are. It's about
proportions.
Mm-hmm. The proportions make it hard for them in this reality to have the fractal resonance with the unified field. And so many of them don't live that long because they're out of sync with that. And this is not a judgment. I'm saying this so people have compassion for them, you know.
So it makes them weak. It makes them nervous.
Yeah.
There's certain things
that would normally flow because the shapes match up, and therefore they're vibrated by the universe. And when the shapes don't match up, it's like the misshapen aspect is kind of fighting with the greater field that's trying to support the ongoingness of life, and it needs certain ratios for that support. So all of life, all biological, well, everything, you know, it's all in the mineral kingdom, it's everywhere. But let's just talk about all the different biological life forms are all full of certain ratios that are based on aspects of the golden mean, different types, you know, phi squared, and on and on. Mm-hmm. You can see the book Power of Limits by a guy named Georgie Doxy. It's
like Doxy, okay.
Yeah. Polish name. Mm-hmm. It's been out for a long time, and the book is full of these amazing diagrams of everything from butterflies and insects and ships and pagodas and Zen gardens and statues, human beings, all showing these ratios throughout the entire body as a canon of proportions. The point is, that's all a fractal based on the golden ratio proportions. You know, and it goes in, and this is all musically governed too. That, you know, when I'm speaking geometry, I've unified geometry and music together. So it's not just two separate fields for me.
Well, just before you get into that, because that's a really exciting subject, but I have a burning question, which is if the universes are downloading some new frequencies and it's creating kind of a shift, does that create a shift in how our fractals work?
I think it stresses it, and there's a type of stress that has us become more and causes us to evolve.
Oh, good. That's a good thing.
Okay. It's like this story of human-type beings, you know, however many millions of years ago on Earth, were on land. Conditions changed from ice ages and various catastrophes and so on to eventually those beings had to go into the water. So maybe they waded at first and they developed different kinds of fins and things for fishing and eating, where part of them was out of the water and part of them was in the water. Then eventually maybe they had to go fully underwater.
So it was the dissonance that pushed them to create that.
Yeah. And so they adapted. Now, it took a long time, and not everybody survived. As a soul, as a spirit, of course, they survived. And maybe they came back later with a body more adapted to the next phase of evolution. So sometimes they didn't make it through the transition from one phase to another. And you can see that when they do x-rays of dolphins, you can see that they had a thumb at one point. And all these things, and you look at baby dolphins and their embryos, and they've studied them, and it's like human, like unbelievable. You know, it's awesome. And then they go into the water. And then other times they come back on land, and it goes back and forth. And the evolution and the adaptability is where the creator has built this adaptability spark, because life wants life to continue. It's not meant to, you know, the extinguishing in the normal kind of way, because we messed up here. And so therefore we've sinned, we've gone, which means to miss the mark. You know, that's one definition. Yeah. And so, you know, the universe has all these things going on to get us to evolve, to use different parts of our brain. And then we get other kind of dimly lit, so to speak, characters. Give them names. I'm not going to call them fully out here at this moment. But anyway, who messed with our DNA and dumbed us down so we could continue not waking up and be slaves and mine gold and do all that kind of stuff for them, you know. And yet we have a spark in us, this God spark that they know. And they basically don't want that God spark to wake up.
Is that what's called free will?
More than that. Mm-hmm. It's way more. It's more than free will. That's a big topic in terms of the nature of choice relative to, you know, thy will be done, and where does the person's own choices fit in the sphere of choice making.
Okay.
But what I'm talking about is a bigger picture than that even. And so as we're waking up, it's taking, for instance, different quality of light stepping down through our sun to us so that we don't burn out. You know, our sun steps down higher energies than our sun is, so that it can deliver that light to us in a form of nutrition that we can digest, so to speak, you see. If we've got too big a download from the great central sun straight to us, it'd probably burn out our circuits, because our circuits aren't designed yet or adapted yet to handle that quality of light directly. So there's a little bit of stepping down, just like we have substations from PG&E Power, steps it down. Otherwise, it'd blow all the wiring in the house out. You follow?
Yes, I do. And I'm also going to ask you this. Is are you capable, when you're with someone like me or anybody, that of perceiving...
Like you or anybody. Well, you're not exactly like everybody.
Are you capable of perceiving, it's not a challenge, it's just an understanding of perceiving where the dissonance is in somebody you're speaking with? Is that how your healing has manifested? Meaning,
I get impulses that tell me different things, and sometimes I have to check it out. Okay. Sometimes it's totally spot on and there's no argument. I mean, it's absolute. I just know it. And other times, you know, I have to watch for my own filters or other influences that could come in, including entities that could come in that do not want that person's field read accurately and fog it up.
And is it easy for you to see that?
It can be very challenging, because they're game players. They do everything to talk like you and make you think, you know, that they're one of the family, one of the tribe, and they're, you know...
So how do you tell?
I can't resist it. You know, like it's a difference. You know, what is a wolf in sheep's clothing? And I say that's a sheep shifter. So I just had to put that out.
That's here. Really good. But also, if we are in the shift, are you one of those purveyors of shift that, even though you're not in a wolf's clothing, that can help people get through the shift with music and with rhythm?
Well, I'm working on that. Yeah, I'm definitely working on that. I mean, I have a car with a 5-speed. I've been tempted to get an automatic, but because of going up hills and clutching over and over and over and over, I'm thinking, okay, I enjoy the fun of shifting and playing with the clutch, but not on the hills for an hour in stop and go traffic from 0 to 1 mile an hour, you know? So I'm debating actually having my first car. The next one I get will probably have an automatic. And with all the things going on, talking and getting a call, I'm hands-free, of course, politically correct, et cetera, you know. And just paying attention to all the crazy drivers who are losing it all over the place and having road rage and cutting people off and, you know, don't signal. And so you got to be really alert, much more alert these days. I don't know how we've made it. I mean, there's been a lot of grace. The only thing I can think of is grace that takes care of
us. The divine has a sense of humor. Right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So let's go back to you helping people with dissonance. I mean, you're talking about dissonance and the shift, and I don't want to know about your gear shift right now.
All right. Well, personally, no.
But you know what I mean is like, I know your work is very profound and you use tuning forks and you use music, the music that you create.
And I've developed some new xylophones too now and sound tubes, and I'm developing some other products, sound products, you know.
And there's another thing you speak about, which is music of the spheres. So I kind of see it as layers of layers of the same stuff. So do you want to
through some of the resonant stuff that resonates with different vibrations that have an intent in them to hold that vibration. So when you sit on a chair, it doesn't turn into some other object that would be uncomfortable to sit on. You know, you want to sit on the chair and know that when you arrive at the chair, it's still behaving as a chair. So I mean, really. And there's agreements for that. Mm-hmm. And now under certain conditions, that chair can change. Like in a vortex, like in a tornado, there's a counter-rotating force, and time and space is dissolved. And when that dissolves, all the physical stuff is loosened up. So chairs and objects in the room are floating around. And then they can float through a window, and then if the field shuts down, you can look at the window, and here's a chair embedded in the window. And the window.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, these things are documented. I don't know why they don't show more of it. Because
that's exciting, actually.
This is what happened in the Philadelphia experiment when they cranked up the field, you know, to make the battleship invisible to radar and look like it disappeared. They got carried away and cranked up the energy. And so all these sailors and objects were all floating around in the room. And then all of a sudden, wham, the field shuts down. And some of the sailors got stuck in the walls, in the bulkheads of the ship. Terrible.
Terrible, yeah.
And those who survived had all kind of stuff to deal with from what they witnessed that they could not, many could not integrate. But it's based on these vortexes, and the vortexes have a neutral point, a zero point, a still point, where the behavior, the physics in the still point is different than when it's spinning in the solidity. So it's not solid. But it can become solid all of a sudden. So, you know, a lot of the different ascended masters and people know how to play with that. So they know how to walk through a wall. Mm-hmm. They know how to find that there's more space than matter and how to part that matter and pull it open and walk through the wall. A lot of them have walked out of jails. They get locked up and they just walk out.
So could it's they not, have actually not, talked with the people who were stuck in the walls and walked them out of it?
What about that?
In the Philadelphia experiment, could these beings, these people who understood about parting the fields, could they have brought people out of the walls so they weren't stuck in it?
Well, some died and had horrible deaths and things. So, you know, they didn't get to it in time. And then later I heard they had to have these little things that they wore so they wouldn't go out of phase with this reality.
Oh, I mean, my, really?
Yeah, I talked about a guy who's having... was in that, and he's having breakfast with his family. He gets up, turns around, walks out through a wall, and they never see him again.
Oh, my gosh. Oh my.
They had this little I don't know what to call it, a little device that helped them be able to become stable in this reality again. Because
they were flexible about which reality
they interfaced with another field that changed things in their behavior and in the way the laws of physics interacted around them. So
that's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah. So you asked about resonance and being able to resonate with things, you know, where it the likeness we're attracted to, like light, like a moth to a flame, that likeness, and there's a resonance that you can feel with people. It like plucks a string in your soul and your being, because you're tuned to be able to be that string, to be plucked by those who have the code. Somebody doesn't have the code, they might not pluck that string, and it's dormant. You might not even know that string is existing in your harp inside your body, you might say. But you meet certain people just being in the room with them or hearing their voice over the phone. I've had that happen with a lot of people. They had that resonance. They go, wow, who is this being? I can hear it in your voice. I've known you for, I've not met you in person. I have had that so much in my life.
Well, you know, Randy, I met you many years ago, and the word that I think about that you taught me to resonate with and respond was activate. So you're saying that some people activate something in someone else.
They have a type of light that can push a button in you and open up something that may be a key, a vibration key that with permission, of course, on many levels of permission, that you've invited them to open that and said, I'm safe to open this with you and thank you for coming into my life at this point in my life, and you have that key, and would you please open this door, because it's been closed for a couple thousand years and it's time for me to open that.
And we don't have to be conscious of that. We don't have to know all the details.
No, it goes on. And why you people, well, how come I get along with this person? How come I don't? There's all these resonances. And sometimes the dissonances actually cause one to grow and to alter behavior and to do things. Maybe it's not as much fun, and maybe temporarily or not so temporarily, not so pleasant. But a lot of times these beings come into our lives to wake something up. And sometimes that wake up call, you know, produces some bruises, you know.
I know that part.
Bonked on the head, and it's not all on like a wiffle ball bat, you know, maybe a little bit more dense, because we're more dense, you know.
So who comes to you? Let's work with your wizardry and bring in somebody that you're going to work with, and let's see how that goes.
Well, basically, I have lived a lot of lives in different domains, different star systems.
And you're conscious of these, Randy?
Some, as much as I can, without my nervous system feeling like it couldn't process that information, or it would feel overwhelmed. I mean, basically, a nervous breakdown is the nervous system saying too much. Mm-hmm. I can't handle anymore right now, and I need to shut down and repair or reorganize in some way.
It's like somebody twanged your strings or something.
Yeah, and so you know you're vibrating like out of your norm so much you can't find your equilibrium. So you need to have some kind of process to find your equilibrium. So I think we have agreements, and sometimes people have, they get hit by lightning literally and metaphorically, and something opens up and all of a sudden they're doing astounding things that they never did before. And because it was their timing and something blew those circuits wide open. And
so you think we're kind of born with a bunch of programs or gifts that need to be activated along the way? Is that right?
Or they can be and maybe need to be activated before they come online, you know, just like with computers, metaphors like that. And certain people have those codes. And it can happen just hearing a person's voice, because there's harmonics in my voice and your voice. And when we talk, certain people hear us differently. They don't only hear just the words. They may hear the soul intent. They may hear things greater than we know that they're hearing.
Wow.
I have people call me and say, I just want to hear your voice. Don't change your phone message. I just need to hear your voice, and I feel better. And then that's their message.
I've had that too, Randy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And not everybody resonates. I mean, think of the people you've met. You hardly want to talk to them because their voice, it just drives you crazy. Mm-hmm. Or what? It's either too high, too low, too neurotic, whatever.
It's scratchy, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm not trying to judge it, but it just doesn't feel good. And it's irritating. And maybe that irritation might serve a point, but too much of that irritation, you shut down a bit. So we all have these different codes. So I feel when I'm talking, it doesn't matter what I'm talking about. If I have that intent and being in service, those resonant codes are in my voice. So whatever question you ask me, that might be something we thought we'd talk about, and we might not get to it. You know, the harmonics are here. And so anybody listening to this, they're going to pick up things that we don't even know they're picking up unless they tell us.
So are you a tuning fork then?
Yeah. I've done healing work with people, and they'll close their eyes, and they'll say, well, what fork is that? And I'll say, well, open your eyes. And I don't even have a tuning fork in my hand.
Wow, I love that.
Yeah, because I've done it so much, I've embodied it. It's in my field, so they can feel the fork etherically, even if I don't have a physical tuning fork in my hand. As an example, that's happened.
I was watching
fun,
some
right?
fellows
so it's resonating
talking.
With these. I do it with the numbers, too. Mm-hmm. By working with these numbers, they're in my field. I can just think of them and stuff can happen. I can direct intent. I can do different things because I've lived it so much. It's embedded in my field and my field touches other fields, even at a distance. I mean, any distance in this universe, my field can touch. In, you know, even, well, I don't know the rules of going beyond our universe to another universe. Mm. I think there's some different things going on there. But like I say, within this universe, not just solar system, our universe, we can communicate anywhere in that, in the holographic field, the plenum, the quantum entanglement of it all. And if I need to send healing to somebody in another country or somewhere else, a little farther out than that, off campus maybe, whatever, that can happen. And it's through our heart because our heart is connected to the heart of God and that's the whole universe. Mm. So that's what we're developing, that heart space. And that's what a lot of the advanced civilizations that tried to dumb us down and genetically manipulate and modify us, they know we have that heart space. And a lot of them.
So why would they want to dull it down?
So that we'll be slaves in their little fictitious version of the reality, in their parallel reality, in their game. So that we be slaves and do what they want us to do and not wake up and say, you know, I mean, you can see it in the Bible even. Wow, if we don't watch out, and this is, I'm paraphrasing, they're going to become like us. Mm-hmm. That's the, basically what that meant. Uh-oh, you know, if we're not careful, we can empower them to wake up and be powerful like us. And then what?
Scale we.
It's over. So we got to make them think we're gods and be afraid and everything else and be afraid to wake up. And that's what's going on with a lot of light workers. Totally. The closer they get to waking up, the more afraid they get. You think it'd be the other way and they relax because, you know, but a lot of them, that's when their real fears come up as they're waking up because they're going up against that programming. It says if you wake up, you're going to get sick. And a lot that happens to a lot of light workers. Mm-hmm. The more spiritual work they do, the more sick they get. And they go, well, I don't get it. I was clueless before and I was healthy and happy, so to speak. They think they were at least. And now look, I'm doing all the spiritual work and I got stuff and symptoms and these things going on. What's the gig? Promises more light. What's happening? I go into more light. I got more symptoms. Doctors don't even know what to do with me.
Yeah, I've heard some stories about that recently. People who channeled and then got Alzheimer's. I'm like, wow, you know.
Yeah. Well, there's, you know, there's a lot of research on the nutrient factors and the game of Alzheimer's and, you know, how to give the game of Alzheimer's the slip. And then there's the Alzheimer's that threat where, you know, there's certain beings that would just love to see Alzheimer's happen and have people go offline and not be able to be the fully expressing rainbow light being that they are, you know?
Yeah, that's true. So let's talk about numbers. How do the numbers work? Are you talking numerology? Or are you talking...
Numerology, you know, is a factor, but the numbers existed before humans' versions of numerology. Mm. As resonances and harmonic resonances and the meanings of the numbers as qualities, not just quantities. Instead of 31 of something, you know, where you can count the peanuts, 31 has a resonance. It resonates with the Elohim and different things, and it's a prime number. It's got all kinds of different magic in that number that's different than a lot of other numbers. Each one has uniquenesses.
So is it like choosing names or words according to the resonance of the numbers that they represent? Is that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I use the numbers, you know, when I design things like these new Dorjes that I have. I mean, I can use numbers and the length and the dimensions so that the numbers play out in the, and contribute to the resonance of the shape based on what we were talking before about that canon of proportions throughout all the biological forms, right? Having that phi ratio golden mean throughout their bodies. And So there's things like that, you know. And so I work with the numbers, and I also work with different shapes, and I work with those shapes conveying certain numbers.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Can we see a dorji? And perhaps you can use that as an example.
Yeah, that's the latest one I've been doing. Now, should I hold it up on the screen?
Yeah, hold it up, because I don't know how we're going to do that, but we're going to do it. That is so beautiful.
This is made of Siberian blue quartz.
Oh, my gosh.
Grown in Russia.
Oh.
It's a lab-grown quartz, but it's a quartz. It's not glass. And then these are hand-cut with special diamond tools.
Wow.
And instead of making them in metal, of course, Tibetans like quartz, and there are ones available that can be found in Asia and different countries, typically made of clear quartz of varying qualities. But I'd always wanted to do it in the Siberian blue quartz, because the blue, the cobalt blue in that matches up with the blue light that's in the center of the cells of all living matter, all biological forms, and the nucleus of their cell has a blue light, little blue pilot light. And that, if you can mobilize and amplify that light, all kinds of healing. Broken bones can heal on the spot. Really? So I studied that healing work with Bob Rasmussen for 25 years. He was a friend and mentor and taught me, and I had full light experience merging with the blue light. Hmm. So I've had this goal of having these in the blue so that when I do healing work with it, I can put tuning forks on it, I can use my voice, I can move it in time and space.
Do you move it around people's bodies? Or what?
Yeah. It's like a figure eight. There's it at 90-degree angles. So there's an electrical flow and a magnetic flow at 90 degrees. It follows it's all based on principles in physics, and it's stylized. But the Tibetans have stylized them. They make them out of their metals and their sacred metals mostly, but the quartz is a good amplifier. And I can put tuning forks on them. I watched the Juto monk, one of them. Now usually they hold it in their right hand, but I don't have that much control in my right hand. So I use it in my left hand, and my circuits can adapt. And he was moving it around, and they were chanting, you know. Wow.
You can do like, that. I know you can.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he's like structuring the reality in the room through the dorje, sending the sound through a still point or a neutral point. Some might even say a zero point, whatever, in the middle. And with their intent, the sound is having a different effect on the other side of the field. So this is like in that tornado. So this is linking up with the tornado. See, where I'm holding it in the middle here is where that time and space is dissolved. The holy moment where the past and the present converge into a supreme present in the moment. And that's where the true healing takes place.
Oh my.
Not in the story of the past or projections of the future or fears of the future, any of that nonsense. All in a moment, a supreme moment of holiness where judgment is suspended and all possibilities are there. If they can be conceived, they are possible.
Judgment is suspended. That's a really important part
of it. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, and then so that's why I'm making them in the blue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's why our universe, the ETs call it the blue universe.
This whole
universe is
like
built
that.
On that blue. You see Christ figures in paintings of different religions, and they're in like a vesica shape, which is a wormhole or a portal,
mm-hmm.
or a bridge in time and space. And often they're surrounded in a blue light. And when Aravinda was over there in the Himalayas and met Nilamatara, who was like 900 and some years old, living being, continually living all those years, she was floating in lotus position off the ground, surrounded in a blue light.
Wow.
You know, that's that blue feminine light that holds our universes held together in a feminine blue light field.
Wow. Isn't
Even
that
though
wonderful?
Blue light is associated with Archangel Michael a lot.
And his big blue sword,
The power of that blue light is not a male power.
Mm.
It's a feminine power, and that's a whole other thing. That's and I'm also making these in a lab-grown amethyst. The purpose of that is to work with the violet light for transmuting things and shifting and clearing negativities. Both of them will clear the negativities. The Rinpoche that I've been talking with about some of this, you know, he could write a whole book on how they use these. And a lot of it's getting rid of spirits and clearing things. And so I use it as an amplifier. Now it's a certain shape and that resonates, and it's able to change the sounds that I'm making by sending it through a structured informed field based on shape resonance.
All right, explain more about that.
And there's, well, you know, in other words, if this was, this could be a lot of different shapes, and because of the quartz, still function as an amplifier, mm-hmm. but it has a certain proportion in the width and the length and the curves and the angles of the curves and various things that then fractally talk to the field in such a way that you plug this into the circuit, it's talking to the unified field, and you can change things that happen in the circuit by putting the right interface in that circuit, somewhere between the creator of all it is, through us, out into the reality that we are interacting with. And that's all based on shape resonance. If the shapes change too much, like I was saying with the bent out of shape, and like I mentioned with the dwarfs, if you get a certain organ in your body that gets too out of shape, it won't behave. The kidney, which looks like a kidney bean,
mm-hmm, right?
The resonance of kidney beans actually resonates with the healing for the kidneys. And fruits and vegetables are all full of these parallels. But if they get too bent out of shape, the flavor would change and their functions would change. A kidney won't work just because it's made out of kidney material. A kidney has to be a certain shape to be doing the work that a kidney does. A kidney is not shaped like a heart and called a kidney. No, it's a kidney, and a kidney is a certain shape. Mm-hmm. And that's all about that shape resonance.
Well, from there we could jump into, say, pyramid shapes that keep things strong and
there's reasons
viable, yeah?
Yeah, and I've made lots of pyramids out of different materials. And the Russians have got all kinds of special pyramids they're building all over Russia. And they put them on farms and things for changing the energy. They're steeper than the Giza-type pyramids. The ratios are different. They're much steeper, square-based mostly, and steeper, much, much steeper.
And why are they steeper? Is there a good reason?
Well, there's a different kinds, and they studied these, and they're all over the Nubian areas, in the desert areas, you know, in the world. There were ancient civilizations that were pyramid cultures, and pyramids were all over the place, and they still are in the world. I haven't even discovered all the pyramids that exist that are buried under the ground that look like mounds or down under the ocean. There's pyramids, because the whole planet was covered with a pyramid complex.
Because we knew, right? We always knew.
Somebody knew. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they pass some of that knowledge on to other people who then knew something or found out. And then there's those who are covering it up so people don't remember or don't find out or remember what they knew. But there's a reason for it, because of the way the shape of the pyramid and the angles are angels. They bend light. Mm-hmm. They interface with the reality differently because of the angles. You change the angle, you bend the light, you change the information. So it's about the manipulation of information. Now, I don't mean negative when I'm saying manipulation, although it can be done negatively.
You're saying design, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you can bring about information, you can absorb information, you can tune into, like an antenna. You tune the antenna to a different length, you pick up a different radio station. Right.
Well, if we jump back to numbers, would you say, proportionally speaking, for example, if you've got a tall pyramid or you have the ones that are, say, like Giza, the numbers would be different. And so that the impact of putting something inside or being inside would be different. Is that
right?
Yeah.
And the angles are different. The brain waves are different. And where it's placed on the planet and how it interacts with gravity and what longitude and latitude it is and how it talks to the matrix of all the other pyramids by where it's placed. And it needs to be a certain shape to be put into that circuit, just like building a circuit board in a computer. Hmm. It's a big, huge computer with pyramids under the water, under the ground. There's a big pyramid in Alaska. It's several hundred feet to get to the top of the pyramid that's underground. That puts out so much energy, it could run all the electrical power in Alaska off this pyramid.
Have you seen pictures?
No, but I know somebody was involved in being, her father went there. I haven't seen a picture of it. They've been.
Wow, I'd love to go there. It'd be really interesting.
Russians know about it. There's a lot, you know, I'd love to see it. I heard a lot of stories and things. And there's all kinds of them that are being discovered around the world. And the beams of light coming out of these pyramids, like the ones in Bosnia, they're scientifically measuring beams of light coming out of these pyramids. How
really?
Well, some of them are still alive. Maybe they've not been functioning, or some are being turned on by the celestial mechanics in the universe operating differently now, and there's a need to turn on some of these pyramids, for instance, because of where we're going, to help stabilize the Earth, to stabilize the tectonic plates, to handle excessive energy so the planet doesn't implode or explode, to
So when you say because of where we're going, is that because we're making a shift or because we're in dire straits?
I think the dire straits is because we're not on either side of the bridge, and the bridge is being built, and we're being asked to trust that as our feet land, it's landing on a bridge that when we look down, we don't see it. And we can't blow up either side of the bridge because we're not going to cross the bridge. So it has to be grounded and anchored. So either side of the bridge also could be grounding with the center of the universe, the great central sun, the center of our galaxy, etc., and the core of the earth, and having that heaven and earth grounding take place, and then, you know, working to build that bridge. And so that bridge can be a bridge of beliefs in the beginning, but that bridge of beliefs can then solidify. It can be built out of a light imagination and sound imagination, and eventually crystallize, and you put your foot on it and it's solid, or appears to be solid.
Can you make the kind of sounds that would structure it?
Say that again, please.
Can you make sounds that would actually structure it?
Yeah, that's how that stuff is done. You know, in levitating the blocks with sound in the ancient world, they knew all these deeper respect for sound and respect for numbers. My research partner for years and years, Wes Bateman, said that the beings that some of them that he talked to, Gracians they were called. Excuse me.
Bless you.
That opened up the sutures on my head there. Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of like...
Curled your hair.
Where we had a blowhole when we were dolphins. You know, really, the fontanelle.
Really?
Okay. Yeah. Seriously.
Well, I don't see it actually working on you right now.
Uh-huh. Well, I'm kind of, you know, disguised. Got my earthly suit on. But, you know, they say that we pray to the Creator in numbers. And that's the posture that I've taken all these years. I meditate with the numbers and I understand that. And it's not I'm doing a number on things in a left brain way. This has to do with quality and resonances and each number having to be in a, like an angel. Hmm. And that movie, you know, The Man Who Knew Infinity, about Ramanujan, the East Indian-born, self-trained mathematician that blew everybody's mind eventually. You know, he worked with that, and they made a comment in the movie, at Jeremy Irons in the movie, a wonderful movie. And they made a comment.
What is it called? The Man Who Knew Infinity?
Yeah.
Okay.
Awesome, awesome. And they made a comment that it's like he knows these numbers personally. They're friends. The numbers are friends of his. And that's how I feel. I've become that way through doing all this work.
So they're like packages of resonances.
Yeah. And each one opens up different kingdoms. So each prime number that can only be divided by itself in one is like an angel. So the number 11 is the angel in charge with everything about how the number 11 operates in our universe. That's a big territory. Elevenness. Mm-hmm. It's the master of elevenness. And how does 11 behave? And how can 11 be used? And then if you
That reminds me of the beginning of the show where I asked you if each of us really has our own signature.
Yeah.
It's sort of similar. Like each of us has our own list of what? Attributes, of functions.
What I take people on a to address that in my workshops to a time in Atlantis where they had an outdoor temple that has steps and pillars and arches, but there's no roof and ceiling and no walls. Okay, so it's open air,
mm-hmm.
right? Kind of like a giant gazebo kind of effect.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a big tuning fork called a Zephyr, Z-E-P-H-Y-R, a Zephyr tuning fork, a giant tuning fork. And you'd walk up to that tuning fork, and that tuning fork would reset the frequency it's sounding to match your personal resonant frequency.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah, check that out.
Wow.
And so let's say for a moment, or you can't help it, you don't believe it. It's nice, sounds like fun. And anybody listening to this, it's, I don't believe that. You don't have to. Make it up. Pretend that that was true, and I'll bet you could take yourself on a meditation back there and play with it and go and approach that tuning fork. And you could come out harmonically balanced or resonated with the part of your vibration that, because of the dues of reality and dealing with the consensus reality and its densities, you may have forgotten more, a little bit of who you are. And by resonating with that, maybe a little more of who you are resonates into your field, into your awareness, into your beingness, into your ability to use that information, your ability to affect reality with information that was dormant and it wasn't affecting reality as much in its dormant state, if at all. And now it's coming online because maybe you have enough love in your field to where you can bring that forward and not misuse it.
Hmm.
How's that?
That's wonderful. I feel a real buzz as you're saying all that.
Yeah, it should be. Just listening to that.
Yes, yeah, it's wonderful.
Listeners will go on the journey as I'm describing that, and we'll do the meditation as they're listening to me talk to you about that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been very powerful. And people got frequencies, and sometimes I had tuning forks in my house and things, and some people even wrote down the number. And sometimes I had a tuning fork that was tuned to that number, and I'd play it. And they got numbers. Not everybody. They all got different things. Not everybody's going to get it as a number because they don't have those references, or they wouldn't necessarily know what it means.
Mm-hmm.
Other people might. Or somebody doesn't even know what it means, and they're given the number. It's like, excuse the expression, it's housewives are on the phone. Remember those? Talking and kibitzing and doodling.
Yeah.
And then they doodle all these sacred geometries. They don't know anything about sacred geometry. They never studied it. They don't like math. They hated math in school. And they're talking on the telephone with their girlfriends and their friends, and they're drawing these amazing geometries. And then they show them to somebody that understands and say, you know what that is? Wow, you just drew a fourth dimensional cube, a hypercube. Well, they go, what? Well, you know, you follow me? And I don't mean any disrespect. And say, I just want to give a cartoon example. Right.
I was thinking of The Last Mimsy. Did you see that?
Well, I love that movie.
Isn't it wonderful?
Magical kids, and they had that Sri Yantra, you know, was a big, that's a big key anyway. The people that chose that Sri Yantra that they had, that model that they, in 3D, that they took apart, that they found, you know, they chose a right geometry for that. That wasn't just some scientific, geometric looking thing.
They actually chose something that goes deep.
Mm-hmm. In the psyche of the in the creation of the universe. That was a Spielberg movie, and I saw it on a billboard. I go, wow, what's this movie? Nobody's talking about it. And boy, that movie got whisked away real quick when it got out there.
I don't know why, because a lot of us have watched it a number of times since it came out on on Netflix or something.
But it's not big time up in the theaters, you see.
No, not at all. But it's people at home, it's a wonderful movie and uses, it's easy, it's a kid's movie, but it uses some very deep,
it has to be a kid's movie, just like the fairy tale books,
mm-hmm.
so that those authors weren't killed for revealing the mysteries. Same with Shakespeare. All those mm-hmm. mysteries were hidden in the plays. Alchemical, numerical resonances hidden in the Shakespeare plays.
Isn't that amazing?
Because and that was safe in that day. And the children's books, no, there's dark stuff in the fairy tales too. That's not really healthy for kids. But on the beneficial side of fairy tales, is full of aspects of the universe that are part of Universe 101, portrayed as a fairy tale, so as not to offend the prevailing puppet masters.
Hmm. Wonderful. Well, let's go back, but I don't want to end this without having some even more experience with you, Randy. What do you think?
Yeah. You know one thing that I find very delightful, and I do this sometimes a few times a day. It's called the Golden Flower Meditation. It uses light. And this is an ancient Asian technique. And what you do is you connect with golden light, which represents the male aspect of creation, the male creation principle. Specific with those words.
Okay.
And it's gold light. It's not white light. It's golden light. And it comes down to greet you from, let's say, the center of this universe at least, where that light might be created for our universe. It comes down on your in-breath, flows through your body, goes out your feet, and goes down and is given as a gift to the core of the earth. There's an iron crystal in the earth, an octagonal iron crystal, and it gives it to that, and the earth knows what to do with it. Then on your exhale, comes up from the center of the earth, black light. And this black light contains all the colors. And this is the supreme mysteries of the divine feminine of reality is in the black light. Now, we're not talking black magic. A lot of people get spooked. You say the word black and this and that, and they get all kind of spooky. No, no. This black light has all the colors absorbed. Like black onyx is a stone that has all the colors. And, you know, and whereas we see other things that give off, like white light has all the colors that are radiating out, and the black light is like absorbed. And some people will see it with some violet in it and a dark indigo, blue-violet, dark,
mm-hmm.
you know. But it contains the deepest knowledge of the true nature of the feminine power of creation.
Wow.
So when you do this meditation, you're blending the male energy coming down through your crown, touching all your cells and going out your feet, but also to touch the spaces between the cells, to surround you with the golden light of the male wisdom of creation. And then as you exhale, this black light enters your body as you're exhaling, and then that feminine light fills your cells and the spaces between the cells, and then it keeps moving and moves out the crown and goes up to the universe and is given as a gift to the universe. So you're in a circuit, a male-female circuit of gold light and black light, totally balancing the male principle and the female principle, not positive and negative, but male and female principles of creation. And I do that. That's a daily thing. If you do that about 20 minutes, you can go into some absolutely blissed out places, useful bliss out. Not you want to leave your body and not be here bliss out. I'm talking about a bliss out that makes it very compelling to want to be in your body. Can you handle that?
Yeah, you don't want to do it while you're driving, huh?
No, because, you know, you could alter your, you know, you could slow you down and your responses because you could get altered. No, there are things people can do when driving and things that, but, you know, everything has to be done with a safety. I have things I do, but it makes me hyper alert. I have a better chance of guessing if somebody's going to cut me off.
Oh, good. Oh, that's helpful.
My field awareness go out there. So I do that.
Do you build your field as well? I mean, is this, mm-hmm. It builds our field so that we inhabit more of our area. Is that it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's what we need to do. There's lots of people have lots of leaks in their energy fields. And in those leaks, their energies are being bled off and vampired off and used up and taken by people and stolen from them. And also with holes in their aura, all kind of different energies can get into a person's field and manipulate them one way or another. So we have to have an integrous, our own personal God-Goddess field of creation that's, no matter what we've done or not done, it has an integrity to that. And then we can learn to go get with the program and behave and walk the talk according to that. But so it takes some work here because of the nature of the dream spell and the effects of gravity and all the tomfoolery that's gone on here for millions of years affecting Earth and Earth inhabitants, that we have to work a little bit harder to clean up our field and build a field that is not tweaked by chemtrails and harp and all kinds of other nefarious things. That
can we use music for that? Can you
absolutely
recommend your
codes in it? If you have the codes and music has the ability to have emotional power, mm-hmm. you know, as opposed to certain sounds that might be beautiful. But at least with music, with rhythm and melodies and harmonies and things like that, and form and structure, etc., and tone qualities, you know, you have the ability to evoke powerful emotions that combine with thought can affect the realities. That's a little bit different than like just striking a bell.
Mm.
That can do profound things, but, and it doesn't mean that emotions wouldn't get released because certain sounds will press the button of repressed cellular memory and repressed expressions and emotions that we store. And so that's possible in that way, but the music has the ability to literally move people. If you play the right music for people all over the world, I would think behaviors could fairly quickly change.
Yes, I would agree.
Behavioral modification through the proper application of music and sound, not most music with a negative intent. And I'm not going to mention styles right now because that's a whole other deal. And I don't
I'm thinking of the like chemtrails, et cetera, that you were just speaking about. I'm thinking.
Scum trails?
No, chem.
Oh, chemtrails.
Call it scum. Anyway, I'm just thinking to fill our lives at times, or at least surround ourselves with music, is a good way to offset that as well, right?
Yeah. To resonate in such a way that the deleterious comings and goings and behaviors and objects and things and intents in this reality don't detune us from our emerging God spark.
Right on.
And then our garden can be tended by ourselves and by our guides and spirits and those who care for that and honor that God spark in us, including those who are very dimly lit, that if their God spark opens up, you never know what they might be able to correct for or do with that wake up.
Wonderful. Now, do you have any current musical pieces or current products that we can talk about before we say goodbye?
Well, one of the things, you know, I've been doing, besides the Dorjés, and people can get those on Etsy, just looking up my name, or Coherency Is, or my name on Etsy, and you can get those Dorjés that I'm having made. I'm going to put other things up. I'm just starting to do that. I had something I never was willing to do before. And I make tuning forks to all these different sacred numbers. I'm working on a project where I translated the different Hebrew names of God into numbers.
Oh, wow. That's
And I make tuning forks based on gematria or the alphanumerics. You know, so, you know, like Lord Jesus Christ in Greek is 888, to give you an example.
Oh, really? That's wonderful to know, isn't it?
And the female pillar of the Temple of Solomon is the number 79. It's the black pillar.
Oh, wow.
And the white pillar is number 729, which is the white male pillar. And so I make up that as a pair of forks to balance the male and left as our pillars, like an 11. That's a beneficial use of the number 11 to be a strong pillar, meaning one pillar is our male aspect, the other pillar is our female aspect. And for those two to work in consort, like in an androgynous blended way where they're not fighting each other, therefore they make it strong. And that's one of the beneficial meanings of the number 11 as a portal, as a gateway. And so I make those tuning forks like that. I make like ones to different archangels, like Gabriel is 246, the number. And
so does that mean that if a person had that tuning fork and hit it, it could bring the resonance of the archangel?
Well, it does, and if you have the intent and you're doing it with intent. So if I play 101, that's Archangel Michael, you know, Archangel 101.
Mm-hmm.
I play that with the intent of communicating to the essence of the Archangel Michael archetype and what its directive and mission is. And it's a way of phoning home, and it's a sonic prayer to evoke that presence and to work with that energy.
Oh, wow. That's wonderful.
Yeah, and I do that like Metatron is 314, the first three numbers of typical values of pi. Not all of them, but most of them, but like 314. And that's Metatron's sacred number. And so I've been doing things with Greek and Hebrew and Sanskrit, and I make tuning forks based on all kinds of magical meanings and all these different things.
Wow.
As a healing tool and as a prayer tool and as a sonic tool that when you play it and sound it, that prayer, if it's 729, goes out 729 times a second. Hertz.
Oh my, wow.
Right? So I'm really, in one second, I've sent that prayer out.
That's wonderful. Now, I have to say goodbye because they're going to take me off stage here. But I wonder if you would come back in a while and further our information.
We just got going here.
I'm excited about it. I've got a whole realm of questions to ask you.
So. We didn't even get to all the things we thought we would briefly
talk
about.
We never do, Randy.
No, that's good. So as soon as you're ready, let me know and we'll do a part 101B.
All right. We'll give you your information. This is Randy Masters.
And my website is being rebuilt, but it's called universalsong.net, universalsong.net. And universalsong@yahoo.com is my email. And so you can connect with me, and you can go on to Etsy and go to Coherency Is or my name. And I'm getting more and more things built as I'm going a little more public with many of my creations. I didn't want to get overwhelmed, but it's time to launch them more.
It's time to get overwhelmed. So this is Veronica Entwistle saying, thanks, Randy, for the resonances that you put in the world, and I'm excited about it. You could be in touch with me at veronicaentwistle.com, and many blessings to everyone, and let's send it out there.
Thank you, and Bob. Thank you.
All right. Thanks to you. Bye,
all right.
Randy.
Bye.